my name is Teresa Nunez, and we have number 7, which is constructing racism. And as you all know, race is a really touchy situation. It's an issue that has affected all of us in some way or another. Throughout history, through institutional policies, and everything, everybody's been affected. So what we did is that we were researching, and we wanted to bring something new to the, to do something different. So we found this thing on white privilege that I've never even heard of, and I was like really, you know, drawn to it. And I was thinking, oh my God, what is this? You know, it sounds like, you know, good information, but you know, what's the structure? Who's behind it? And we wanted to get some more information. Well, we didn't think we're going to find a lot of information. But the more we looked, it was all over the place. And then all of a sudden, we started seeing it everywhere we looked. And so then we kind of like started to experience it more and more, because a lot of times, you know, when we experience white privilege, we don't even know what's happening. And we are, or we don't know that it's happening to us, or that there's some sort of form of racism being done to a non-white person. And when I say non-whites, I'm talking about everybody other than white. And so what we did was we said, okay, so what is it? And so it's the unspoken privilege of a white person who has benefited from some form of unearned advantage taken from a non-white and putting that non-white at a disadvantage. Okay? We were fortunate enough to find this book named The Heart of Whiteness. And I put up some pamphlets up there. And it has a little face. And that's the book cover. Okay? And The Heart of Whiteness is about confronting race, racism, and white privilege. And this is written by Robert Jensen, who is white. Okay? He's a professor in journalism from the University of Texas. Okay. He claims that all Americans with European backgrounds have some certain expectations of high moral standing and have considered themselves the white race, which just means that they're not people of color. Okay. And whiteness also represents normalness. Okay. This idea of whiteness has strong connection to domination and or referred to as white supremacy, which is a really touchy word, which is really horrible. Because when I think of white supremacy, I think of Nazis, I think of KKK, I think of skinheads, I think of running away, hiding. And they don't care if, you know, they don't care what color you are. If you're not white, you're in trouble. Okay. So this is what that's the whole reference of the white supremacy thing. And that connects to forms of racism. Okay. Without even reading the next line, you already knew that just by the examples and the groups that word represents. Some whites would like to think that we have reached the end of racism. You know, I was hoping that we did. I kind of thought we did, you know, reading the history books of the 60s and the civil rights movement. And we said, yeah, you know what? People should not be treated like this. You know, and we thought, hey, you know what? We're really coming into a new light, new century. People are gonna have equal rights. And you know, it was really hopeful, but it was just a thought. Okay. In the United States and others, that would celebrate the diversity, but remain oblivious to like the economic, social, and political effects of a nation founded on the system of white supremacy. I'm talking about, does anybody know what I'm talking about? United States government. The reality of race, racism, and white privilege demonstrates power in the system, and that denies non-white people from full humanity. Humanity is just a person of, you know, mankind. It just, civilization. It just means you and me. Also keeps white people from fully accessing their humanity, okay? By the whites basically oppressing all the non-whites and pressing their dominance on us and their rules and regulations, they're taking a little bit of us away from them, because we're the same. We're just different colors. History. Let's explore the history of the white race behavior. The European whites, called Euro-whites, considered themselves of high intelligence and the explorers of their time. When they were considered, when they considered traveling west, they knew that they were going to confront dark, savage, foul, unstable people who lived in huts or teepees. These people from the west were considered savages of low intelligence and could not compete with the Euro-whites, now referred to as Americans. The idea of the whiteness justified the movement of colonizing savages and the Americans, would claim that they were missionaries assisting and teaching the savages, and ultimately civilizing, which means taming, okay, a primitive culture. So they thought that everybody west had a primitive culture because they were more intelligent. Okay, but that was their opinion. The United States supported the whites, the Americans, called the Bear Flaggers, to confiscate the land of the non-whites. The Bear Flaggers were under the command of a U.S. Army officer named John C. Fremont, who rallied behind the mission to extend further west to the Pacific coast. The American whites' sense of national and racial affiliation proved a powerful force. They were really powerful. They were coming together, and they were just going to take it all. The non-white residents could only imagine that their futures under the U.S. rule would be like. The Americans promised the non-whites would be equal to them in social status, being considered a white themselves. This meant the same opportunities and the same privileges. Okay. The non-white Americans quickly found that the American white settlers would develop new patterns of residency that would exclude the non-whites from the process making and making it difficult for them to learn the new laws without an explanation of the structure. The non-whites were lost, and their social decline of status quickly became the focus on the non-whites as unequal and unworthy. The American whites degraded the non-whites through slander and name-calling, attacking their intelligent race, their intelligence. This race became the issue and ultimately creating a violent society. So they were like basically promoting racism. In order for the Americans to maintain their power, they would need to create levels of social status, okay? And we learned that earlier, you know, when we were doing the whole, you know, upper class and lower class thing. So they were developing this, the levels of social status for the Americans at the top. With this idea of superior status, all non-whites would be left to build their own identities and own order behind the American. So as long as the Americans were on top, everybody could fall into place, whoever it is, catch me if I can, if you can, if you can't, you know, we're still gonna be on top. In terms of stereotypes, the Americans believed that whiteness was a prime example of goodness, okay? And the non-whites were not good. Nor were they intelligent. This idea justified the stereotype idea of non-whites being considered a low class and were not of good people. With the idea in place also assisted to maintain the idea of racism. So it kept them down because they thought, well, the non-whites are dumb, they're lower class, they're savages. We need to tame them. We need to teach them the better life. So you know what? They're not worthy. They're not worthy. They're not even good. Okay? And that was the whole thought process. The Americans wanted the non-whites to reject their cultures, which is also another thing. Whites wanted us to assimilate into their culture, teaching us their beliefs. And they wanted us to just free ourselves from everything we've learned from generation to generation and forego what we believe is our culture and, you know, embrace theirs. And that was really, really difficult. And a lot of people said, you know what, I don't want to do that. You know, I don't want to give up my identity because this has something to do about you, who you are. Not who you want to be, like the iPhone thing, right? The Americans wanted the non-whites to reject their cultures and conform to the norm, and they called it norm. Whiteness is norm, the norm of whiteness. This would mean that the non-whites would have to assimilate into the white community, which was a negative feeling from the beginning. Nearly a century ago, the color line between whites and non-whites remained a force to be dealt with in our society. Where does the concept and practice of whiteness fit into our social process? Okay, it says Americans are the dominant race, okay, period. They make up the rules and change them for personal gain. The bad treatment of non-whites was not something new. It was part of our history, okay? And when I say that, I say our history, everybody knows the history. Thomas Jefferson, you know, had slaves, he enslaved non-whites to pick his cotton and to increase his wealth and to, you know, belittle them and beat them bare minimum, and they were in shacks in the back of his home, but he treated them that way, and that's what this means. They made up the rules that came and changed personal gain. They have that treatment of pain, for example, the slave trade, and taking land by they were taking land and taking it from the owners, and they to form some sort of ethnic cleansing. What they were doing is when they were taking the land, a lot of times they had to dispose of the owner. So a lot of times these people were killed. And they were calling it like ethnic cleansing, like getting rid of the bad race. This view of whiteness is both material and rooted and institutionalized in our government. The American system has been stewing in this myth of democratic society, but in its reality, it's capitalist society provided by all the non-whites in this country who are doing all the work. These non-whites are predominantly poor, undereducated, and puts them in a position of a laborer. Okay. While the power of the position belonging to the boss, the whites, who collect all the benefits. Okay, and these are like examples of white privilege. People walking down the street, opposite direction of each other. Whites coming, non-whites coming. The whites will not move out of the way, almost forcing the non-white to move. But this action of superiority displays actions of ownership and belonging. And the second example, non-whites at restaurants or cafes would get poor service, you know, from the establishment, while the whites would be seated first and or in a better location. Okay, so they won't have the table near the bathroom. So every time the bathroom opens, the door's hitting, you know, somebody in my party's door, or you know, we're seated in the back so that when people come into the establishment and take a little scope, what kind of establishment is it? You know, who's being served here? Oh, okay, all the non-whites are in the back. It looks like a good place to eat because all the whites are in the front. So that's how some people do it. It's embarrassing, it's horrible, but it's true. The unspoken idea of discrimination in stores. Oh my God, discrimination in stores. This, I totally kind of like related to, I couldn't believe it. With non-whites entering the store and being followed or monitored by video or like security guards kind of like behind them or kind of like looking over your shoulder, it's really uncomfortable. While the white customer can freely and comfortably be able to shop without feeling they were being watched or followed. This is a form of harassment, stalking, and racism. Okay, white students know, okay, this is this guy, his name was Powell. In 1997, he was writing an article saying, hey, it's okay that the whites have a structure, at least they have a structure. And this is what he wrote. He said, white students know the rules of the game. He must be a football fan. And are better achievers, okay? Just as members of the white society, they know the rules. They're brought up with them. So he's implying that they're taught this, which is also alarming. This is an advantage of being white. They learn the rules as they grow up, and they succeed in life. Well, yeah, well, you know, you're the boss, you're making the rules. everybody under you or your family that didn't make it. Those who are not white never get a chance to learn the rules, and they are generally not successful. That's what Sky Powell wrote. Okay, economic. Whiteness offers preference of hiring over non-white groups. And there's also like a prejudice or, I would say prejudice, for admission to public events and schools of equal privilege with a classification that whites are the superior race. With this idea of white privilege, the white voting power has advanced whites to official government positions and businesses, securing their superiority, which is the effect of an unbalanced economic structure, and the power putting the non-whites again at the disadvantage. Again. This idea of superiority in the white society is used to place the whites in power of the decision-making for, guess who? All the non-whites, everybody else. The whites are now legally empowered to take from the non-whites whatever they want. This is a form of white supremacy, another form of racism. I can't even say that enough, but I guess I don't have to say it anymore. Forget it. Racism has been institutionalized in our government by placing white presidents. Oh, and I brought this from home. It's my daughter's. And it's a book of all the presidents in the United States. Can anybody tell me what color is our president? Bush, like, and I was reviewing this the other day, and I was like looking at it, my daughter pointed it out to me. Every single president of the United States has been what?
White.
And male.
Yeah, that's another dominance, but we are not going to get into that. So, okay, male dominance. You guys know who you are. Okay, and that was a loophole army, because that's what makes it. This man is like the most powerful man in our country, I mean the nation, and he's making all the decisions for us, which are kind of like bad because, you know, Bush is not doing very well, but it puts him in power and he's representing us, and this is really okay. So, so president's most powerful office in the nation. This form of racism also promotes policies that have slavery and confiscation of land from non-whites, demonstrating the white privilege idea as unearned advantage. The non-white groups struggle, trying to compete and assimilate into society of whiteness. You know, a lot of us try to assimilate, okay, into the American dream and stuff, because we want it too, we want some of that. You know, I should be speaking Spanish. I speak English, that's my first language. Okay, so in some way or another, to get an education, to be successful, we have basically semi-assimilated because I refuse to give up my traditions and my tamales at Christmas. You're not taking them away from me. And I refuse to like have a cross in every room. That is for my grandmother. She made me do that. You know, I don't want to totally assimilate, but I have to if I want to be successful. Okay? Or semi. Okay. But this is similar into society of whiteness, but will fail only because they are not white. Even though I'm assimilating halfway, and even if I try to assimilate all the way, because a lot of my girlfriends call me Oreo, you know, I don't get it, but still. it doesn't bother me because I've been called worse. we fail. We automatically fail. And do you know why we automatically fail? We're disqualified because we're not white. So it's aimed for certain members, and it's not us. There's also examples of fears, okay? And with this, I'd like to turn it over to Alex. And we're going to do like a question and answer period afterward, okay? And so I might be back up. So I'm going to hand it over to Alex.